Okay, good evening, everybody. Thank you for finding your ways back into the Zoom link, the Zoom room. I will share my screen in just a moment. So previously, we did mention that each of these shiurim are going to be self-contained. It will be understandable for those who are joining for the first time as well. But there is a connectedness to all the topics that we're talking about. They're part of this larger Kuntra Sachesa, this essay about kindness of giving and taking. And we discussed previously how everything can be boiled down to bringing us closer to giving or bringing us closer to a mindset of taking. So last time we talked about love and how love comes from giving. It's not that we necessarily only give to those whom we love. Actually, love can be created with acts of giving. We can turn people into our families, turn people into kamocha. And we talked about how parents love is because parents have to care for children at such a young age, from infancy. That's actually what builds the love. So last time we gave that shiur, 2 weeks ago, Hashem apparently said, don't just talk about it. It's time for you to do that. So Baruch Hashem, we had a baby. So you got to put it into practice to actually see it's true. When you're holding that little helpless child, and you suddenly realize that you have to be responsible to give everything, and that's really what builds the love. And this week we're going to build off those discussions and talk about ambition. Ambition for materialism, drive, ideas of dreaming big, and why it is that people always feel so empty. Why it is that when we are trying to achieve material success, no matter how much we seem to gain, it always feels like it's never enough. It always feels like we want more. Why we always feel so down. It reminds me of the story of two factory workers who felt completely overworked. Their boss was completely unforgiving, never gave them a break, and they never had a chance to go on vacation. So one of the coworkers said, I just need to get away to get out of here. So he climbs up the wall, and he hangs upside down from one of the light fixtures. So the boss passes by, he comes and he says, what are you doing up there? The man says, I'm a light bulb. And the boss says, okay, you're clearly losing it. You need a break. You should go home. Guy packs up his stuff, and he leaves the room. And the second guy starts to gather his stuff and leave, and the boss says to the second guy, well, where do you think you're going? He says, well, I'm not going to stay here and work in the dark. So obviously, I got to go. Right? So our drive to work, our drive to be successful often can make us sick and have damaging effects on our mental health, and therefore it's very important that we're conscious and conscientious about what it is that breeds that feeling of ambition. Where does it come from, and how does it relate to mental health? How does it relate to our abilities to be happy, and why doesn't material success actually bring us happiness? So we're going to read from Perek Zion, which is on page 39. It's on the screen. And for those in the room, we have sources as well. So Perek Zion She'ifa. She'ifa is a word for drive, ambition, a desire to grow, a desire to always bring in more and more and more. So he writes, B'nei Adam, maritzim es ha'adam ha'sho'ef. We have this great value about the person who's ambitious. We want our children to grow up to have big dreams. Dream big. Strive for anything. You can do anything. Just keep going higher, higher. No one can tell you no. One of the philosophers, he says, once wrote, ambition itself is life. Is that correct? It's on a Jewish perspective that ambition itself is the purpose of life, to dream, to strive, to continuously try to take in more and more. He explains, Heina she'ifa hi ravon. Ambition and drive are really just a type of hunger. He's going to compare it now to hunger for food. Kasher yish'af hara'ev le'achol, like a hungry person desires to eat food. Kacha, the same way, kol asher yish'af elav ha'adam ra'ev hu la'oso davar. If you want to redefine what it means to be ambitious, to drive, you hunger for it. You hunger for money, hunger for materialism, hunger for success, hunger for promotion, hunger for kavod, for honor, for promotions and academic settings, professional settings, in our families, in our communities, to always be seen as greater and greater. Therefore, he says, Al-Kain ta'us gidola ta'aha choshevahu. The philosopher who said that ambition itself is life, that is incorrect. Haravon einenu chayim. A hunger cannot itself be life. Ela hachai ra'ev hinehu. A person who is hungry is necessary to be alive. He has to fill that hunger in order to, let's say, for physical hunger, he needs to be able to eat. It's a reminder for him to fill his body with sustenance, to take another step, to be able to wake up tomorrow, to be able to continue living. Haravonu asher sam akel baruchu baberuim leman haskirim al hamasim asher yasu l'kiyim gufam. The drive, the urge to go to sleep is a reminder to rest your body. The urge to eat is a reminder for a person to take care of their physical strength. Kacha, he says, Gam she'ara she'ifos mini ravon heina. All types of drive and ambition, professional, academic, all those material pulls, they are just types of hunger. Shlucha Yitzrei Levavenu, the urges of our heart, and Latova Im L'ra, whether we're striving for something good or striving for something not so good. And he gives an example. He said, look at the animal kingdom in the last paragraph on this page. He says, look at all the animals and all living creatures. He says that most creatures, they eat until they feel full. And once they feel full, they stop eating, with one exception. What's the only creature that's known for eating 24/7, never stopping? He says the pig, right? We have an expression like a person eats like a pig. A pig is able to eat continuously and able to eat everything. I think pigs are called omnivores, which means that they eat everything, right? And they continuously eat, and they're never satisfied. Whereas other animals in the animal kingdom, they eat until they're satisfied, and that's the end of that. Where it's underlined here in the last paragraph, Kacha gamba adam oev kesef lo yispa. Quote from Shlomo HaMelech in Koheles, a person who desires money and materialism will never be satisfied. He'll constantly be hungry. The ra'ev li olamim, he will never ever be able to fill that hunger. Zehu choli ra. It's a terrible illness that man has. Terrible illness. In the last line he says, Ki kefi asher yaspi eim ha'adam, the more you satisfy these urges for kavod, for money, for vacations, ko yosifu l'ra'ev yoser v'yoser. Think of it like an addiction. An addiction. The more you feed an addiction, the stronger the urge becomes. No one's ever quenched and completely wiped out an addiction because you fed the addiction. Okay, so I had an urge for something. I fed the urge, now I'm done. Oh, that's what he quotes on the top of the next page, page 40. That Gemara is talking about another type of urge, an urge for sexual pleasure. The Gemara says, the more that you feed it, the hungrier it becomes. Very good. Top of page 40 now. That's what he says. That's the idea when it comes to addiction. So he says in the second paragraph on page 40, the first half of the shir is going to be a little bit more depressing, a little bit more understanding why it's so hard to achieve success. And hopefully we'll turn it around and come up with some practical understandings of how it is we can feel satisfied, how it is we can feel properly filled up. He writes over here in the second paragraph, if you think about it a little more, that Hashem actually had pity on the pig. Because even though the pig is eating all the time, whatever he finds, he's happy with. He eats. You ever hear a pig complain before? Obviously not. So the pig must be happy. He's happy as a pig laying in the mud. Wherever he goes, he doesn't care if he's dirty, he doesn't care what he eats. Whatever he has, he's fine. So the pig, at the end, after the brackets, on the second to last line, Al-Kain lo yizbol ha-chazir shum tsar b'ravono. The pig, by his constant hunger, doesn't feel any pain. Ki na pochu. On the contrary, shemamali es tavaso tamid, he's constantly able to fill his desires. V'chay avheim v'chay oneg she'ein bo hefzek. He's continuously, incessantly able to fill his piggish desires. However, he says, Lo kein ha'adam ha'ra'ev l'tavas yitzro, a person who's constantly hungering for materialism, hungry for success, zah asher yishaf elav, that which he draws toward him, that which he sucks in, rachok hu mimenu ma'od, just always seems farther and farther away. The glory he chases after always seems out of reach. The material success and recognition always seem out of his grasp. He says, man can battle, man can work himself to the bone, and it never seems to make a difference. Where it's underlined in the third paragraph, Vim gam shanim harbe yechia, a person can live hundreds of years, lo yasig al chetzia. He would never even reach half of what he desires. The Kochim Chazal, a person does not leave this world with even half of his desires fulfilled. The next paragraph, he takes it worse. We're getting from depressing to super depressing. He says, people are worried about all kinds of things. They're constantly saving up more and more money because they're worried about the needs for themselves today. But not just that, they're worried about what's going to be for their children and for their grandchildren. Does a person ever feel like they have enough? Okay, I'm set for life right now. That's it. Now I can just cruise. No reason to work anymore. No reason to worry about my investments anymore. It's fine. I'm set for me. What if my kids? What if my grandkids? What if society? What's going to be to the next generation? He writes, a person is worried about time periods that he's never going to even live to see. But a person is so driven, a person who's completely obsessed with continuously amassing wealth and amassing success, will never be able to quench it, will never be able to feel that he has enough. He's constantly worried, constantly nervous. At the end, where it's double underlined, v'nimtza ra'ev ra'avon no ra'mi kol tzad, he is constantly worried on all sides, ad shiyamos ra'ev v'yageya. Eventually he dies still hungry and all worn out. Wow. What a way to start off a shiur. So, turns out mankind is driven by this unquenchable, insatiable desire to continuously grow and to have more and more, and he's never able to achieve it. He compares it to the animal kingdom. He has a very powerful mashal, something that he personally witnessed. At the bottom of this page, page 40, he writes, many years earlier, he had been, I'm not sure where exactly he was trekking, somewhere in the north, he says he saw a pack of wolves. Ever see a pack of wolves? On YouTube, maybe? Not personally, okay. But Rav Dessler personally apparently saw a pack of wolves traveling together. What do packs of wolves do when they travel? They're looking for a good restaurant? Looking for a good movie? They're looking for some discarded carcass, some animal that they can eat together. So a pack of wolves, many wolves are traveling together, and they come across one lone sheep, a deceased sheep lying on the side of the road. So all the wolves started jumping on top of the sheep to get their fill, but obviously they have to outbeat each other. So the wolves started biting each other and started scratching each other and pouncing and jostling each other to be able to get first in line. They forget about the animal and they ended up just fighting over with each other. The weaker wolves, he says, went down instantly. They got pushed, they got beaten, they got bloody. They went down really quickly. And the stronger ones emerged victorious. And then the stronger ones started to fight with themselves until eventually one wolf, the lone wolf as they say, the lone wolf was able to be victorious. He beat out the other strong wolves. He was able to take the Nivela, take the carcass of the sheep in his mouth, and walked off, himself bleeding. On top of page 41, Rav Dessler says, I thought about this more. That image about the wolves fighting each other, attacking, killing each other, and at the end, one wolf emerges victorious. He says, think about what just happened. He looked behind at all the wolves left behind, bloody, laying on the ground, and one wolf in the distance running off with his splendor, his bounty. And he says, look what that wolf had to go through to be successful. The tsaros that he went through. He literally almost gave his life to be able to eat just a simple meal. And then he looked back, he says in the third paragraph, he looked back, v'shavti v'ra'isi b'nisharim. He looked at the wolves, the other 50 wolves who were left behind. B'nei pitz'ehem od rabim v'ra'im yipza'av. They were obviously much more injured than the wolf who was victorious. Damam avad, they had lost a lot of blood. V'kocham sar mehem, they were weak. U'maho ilu b'mochamtam. What did they gain from it? After all that fighting and biting and attacking and pouncing and jostling, what have those wolves accomplished? Yargishu charpas b'nutzachim. They felt the shame of having lost the battle. Asher chevram hikam, they were hit by their own pack. The gam achal v'saveh v'dashen, and they were beaten and eaten and stepped upon and trampled. V'hem esfei makos, right? That the one guy who won, he got to eat, he's hungry. He's satisfied. But they, left behind, are all bloodied and beaten. And they're still hungry. After all that, aside from all the wounds and the blood and the exhaustion, they never were even able to accomplish what they set out to do. They got badly beaten, and they got nothing out of it. The gam rav onam, za asher leman hasbiu nilchamu, their hunger for which they fought to satisfy, odena b'chesko k'barishona, was left unfulfilled, still left exactly as they were before. What an image. He says, as he now thinks about this image now, he thinks about it when it comes to the drive that we have for materialism. It's a dog-eat-dog world. We're always looking to outdo each other. And it's less about getting the goal, about getting the meat, about getting the paycheck, as it is about outdoing our neighbors, or outdoing our people in the community, or outdoing our people at work. It's a dog-eat-dog world, and all we have to do is bite and kick and scream and do the best we can to outbid everybody else. And a couple here and there are able to emerge victorious. They get the paycheck, they get the promotion. But how long does that feeling of satisfaction last? And at what cost are the victors able to get it? And that's for the victors. He says, where it's underlined over here, avalim kohu gorel ha-menatzeach, that's what happens to the one who wins, that he's all bloody and has to go through all that competition. Maya chelek ha-menutzach, how about all those who lost? The rov ha-olam menutzachim b'tach arusam. Aren't most of us in life the losers? Most of us in this dog-eat-dog world do not emerge victorious. We do not come out feeling like we've accomplished, we've beaten up all of those around us. Hare lamanu ki ha-shoef, a person who is constantly hungry and driving for success, he says, ha-ra'av hu ha-umlal she-b'chol ha-bru'am kulam. He is the hungriest, he is the emptiest of all of life's creations, because he is constantly hungry. And he never feels full, and he is never able to accomplish anything. He feels beaten up. Even if he does achieve, he has to go through a terrible bloody battle. But most of us, he says, are not even accomplishing those things. Is it all worth it? Is it all possible? So why is it, he says in the next chapter, he says, why is it that unlike physical hunger, where if you eat, eventually you feel full, why is it when it comes to materialism? Why is it when it comes to covet, honor, promotions, success, vacations, why don't we ever feel satisfied? Why don't we ever feel that it's enough for us? And he says over here at the bottom of page 41, because when a person is eating physical food, there is a set amount. They only could eat so much. Unless you're my kids at a kiddush. Then there's this no limit to how many cakes and candies they can eat. But in general, right, the stomach only holds a certain amount. and there's a finite amount of space that can be occupied, and eventually it's full and you run out and that's it. But here, when it comes to drive for materialism, for honor, for glory, he says on the top of the next page, "Lakachas la'atmo davar shehu chutzalo mipnei shehu chutzalo." This is such a powerful line. People desire these things because they don't have them. Nimsa, it turns out, "Ki lo mipnei chashivas etzem ha'inyanim yish'af ha'sho'ef aleihem." There's nothing inherently enjoyable about a special car, or a special neighborhood, or a special house, or a special trip, especially in the age of social media, where everyone's just looking for likes from everyone else. What it is that drives people, he's saying, toward these material goals is the fact that they don't have it right now. If what they're desiring is the very inherent fact that they don't have it, well, then once they get it, there'll always be something else that they don't have. If there was inherent value to this promotion, this job, this house, this car, this vacation, this status, this lawn, if that was the goal in of itself, then fine. So you get it, you feel full. It would be a finite, measurable, quantifiable thing that you're lacking. You get it, and you feel full. Just like a sandwich, stomach empty, stomach full, the end. But when you're chasing something, and its value is only the fact that you don't have it right now, that everyone else has it, or this is my chance to one-up someone else. If that is the goal, and very often it is when it comes to materialism, then how could you ever feel satisfied? How could you ever feel satisfied when the urge is to take something you don't have? There's always going to be something else that you don't have. And he writes in the bottom, with underline V.M. Cain, halfway down, V.M. Cain, kevar nizgala lefaneinu atav lama ein soveh l'shoef. Now we know why materialistic urges can never be satisfied. Ki lelo davar sha'af. He's craving for something that doesn't have any substance to it. Ba'ach ruach yasig. He's just chasing air. And he writes that, he continues, that people don't learn from past experiences. Listen, we've all had promotions or success in terms of different degrees or different accomplishments in our career, and we've never felt it was enough. So why would the next stage bring you that satisfaction? Why don't we learn? He asked rhetorically. Why don't we learn? You know, the last time we chased something, the last time we chased that job, or we chased that promotion, or that vacation, or that stage of life, or that move, or that house, how long did that feeling of satisfaction last? If that drive was based on, I don't have it right now, and everyone else seems to have it, it's not going to last as a lifelong fulfillment and satisfaction, because there'll always be something else you don't have. And we don't learn from that. We just look to the next thing. Very insightfully, at the very bottom of this page, page 42, he says, "V'inei tzarech ladas ki zesh enikra es hamamon kinyan." That which we refer to our physical possessions, our houses, our cars, our clothing, our gadgets, our technology, we refer to them as kinyan, something you acquire, ain't el adimion. It's just a farce. It's a facade. You can't actually acquire something. What does he mean? Ki lo yuchal hadam leknos davar gashmi, sheyis acheid imo v'yia chelak mimeno kegufo. Kinyan means to acquire something, to really make a part of yourself. When you buy a new iPhone, does it become part of you? Often we can't put it down, so it feels like it's part of us. But can you truly ever fuse it with your body? Do you ever internalize it? Do you really make it one with yourself? No. Ve'ein tzarech lomar b'nafsho. You certainly don't bring it into your body. You definitely don't bring it into your soul, to your essence, to your life. And yet we call it a kinyan. You acquire it. It becomes something that you own. He says, Indian habayla is the concept of ownership when it comes to your car or your horse or anything else. When it comes to ownership, it's a man-made construct to just identify, don't take my stuff. If it belongs to me, that means you can't take it from me. And if it's damaged, we know who has to pay for it. The idea of ownership is just a man-made construct to understand who's the owner, who's responsible for things. If it damages someone else or if someone breaks it, who are they paying money to or when I have to get a new one? That's the idea of ownership. But it doesn't actually become one with the person. He's striving for things that is outside his grasp because they are not possible to fuse with oneself. They will always remain external to him because that's what they are. How can you ever make it one with yourself? On the top of page 43, he says, "Oy lemi sheshoev lidabek b'ma shelo efshel lidabek bo." A great line. Woe is to the person who strives and drives to cling to something which has no possibility of clinging to him. All he wants is to feel like this job is going to make him. All she wants is this idea, this respect and honor that's going to be one with her. But what makes it one with her? What makes him feel like he owns it? If it's a car, if it's a house, if it's a vacation, these things don't become one with you. So how would you ever feel like you have it? How do you have it? What do you have? As he called, you're chasing air. What are you holding? So you're sitting in the car. Then you get out of the car. So then when you leave the car, you still feel that satisfaction with you. So you have the job, and you're at the office, and you're well-respected. But then you go home, and you fight with your family. And suddenly, where'd that respect go? Where is it? It's just empty, just air. And we're chasing that all the time. It says, Ki tavasa lo tavo, v'lo yale biyado ela atzar. Woe is to this person who strives to cling to things that can't be clung to him. Woe is to that person because he'll never be able to achieve it. It only brings him misery. Ashrei mi sheshifaso hiliknos kinyanem benafsho. How lucky is a person whose drives and the midah, the trait of striving, being ambitious for growth, it's not a bad midah in of itself, but if what we're striving for is more recognition, more talents, more honor, more degrees, well then we're never going to feel like we have it. But if we're really striving for something that becomes one with us, which we'll talk about what that means, how does a person do that? Okay, that's a tough task we have to define in a second. But what if we could strive for things, turn that ambition, turn that drive toward things that could become one with us, that actually become part of our soul, part of our body, part of our essence? We'd feel full. We could feel satisfied. We could feel full and accomplished if we change what it is we're chasing, if we change what it is that we're trying to fill ourselves up with. These are things, he says, that cannot be stolen from us. We don't have to hire insurance to protect ourselves from the true spiritual satisfaction, from a true sense of accomplishment that runs internally. It isn't based on approval from others. It isn't based on praise and recognition from those superiors or those below us. It doesn't require people labeling us and putting us in magazines. If that's what we're chasing after, how do you ever keep that with you? There'll always be someone else who's going to outpace you. Another wolf is going to bite you in the back, step on you. And how long till that sheep that you finally were able to acquire is excreted and you're hungry again? So where does this take us? What's he going to say now? So we have this whole doomsday terrible scenario of, wow, man is striving for things that don't make him happy because he's not really acquiring them. They're not one with him. He wants them because they're external, and because they're external, he'll never get them. And he's always going to want more and different things because he's never chasing something of substance. So where does this take us? Parakhas, our last parak for tonight, we'll give a positive spinning and hopefully come up with some practical takeaways to turn this around. Where it's underlined double. He says, Haravon hu os l'chisaron. Think about drive, which he defined as hunger. Ambition is a hunger for something. I love this. He says, hunger is a sign of lacking. When a person is hungry, it means that they are lacking nourishment and sustenance. A hunger for something, anything, means you currently don't have it. He writes it in terms of food, and he writes this in terms of all types of ambition and drive. But think about it in English, too. The English word want, W-A-N-T. What does the word want mean? Want means desire, drive. It means the things that we're chasing after. But the word want in English also means something else. What does it mean to want? It means to be lacking. Right? What do they say? Hashem ro'i lo echzar. The Lord is my shepherd. I shall not want. What does it mean? Not want what? Echzor. Lacking. It's translated in these old Bibles as I shall not want. To want means to be lacking. That's like our first takeaway. Just try to think about that. The next time you find yourself saying, I want something, try saying, I currently lack this, and see if it changes your perspective. I want to go on vacation, okay? I'm currently lacking a sense of being relaxed and being vacationed. Okay, so that might be true. Yes, I do feel like I'm lacking that. Good. So you reframed it, and it makes sense. What if you say something like, I just want more appreciation. I want more recognition. So what you're really saying is, I currently lack being appreciated. I currently lack recognition. When you put in those terms, maybe you say, well, is that really true? I lack it. Maybe I don't lack it. Maybe my family respects me. I have my coworkers and some people in my office who respect me. People in the community respect me. If I'm saying I want it, I'm saying I currently don't have it. I'm wanting for it. Is that true? And in this way, he explains, Zos Ameres HaSheifa Hi Koach HaMoshech. Drive is to bring things that you're currently lacking. Yimshoch ala adam dvarim sheyamalu es chesrono, filling up the void, filling up the emptiness inside. If that's the case, what it means to be full, what it means to be satisfied, who asher nismalei hachisaron, filling that void, filling the emptiness. He says, therefore, going back to how we started the whole series, this ambition, hasheifos, told us koach hanetila. It truly comes from a sense of taking. I don't have, I need, I'm empty, I have to take and fill it up. Ein lahem sova, it'll never be satisfied. Ki chesronem lo yamalei le'olam. They will never be able to fill that sense of lacking, that sense of emptiness. So what does it mean to be a giver? What does it mean to be a giver, and how is that going to fill the void? How is it going to put an end to this endless ambition that drives people insane and doesn't let people work and feel accomplished? He says, giving is not to take in more and more and say, I'm lacking, I have nothing, I don't have enough money, I don't have enough honor, I don't have enough recognition, I don't have enough stuff, I don't have enough status. Because if you want those things, you're saying you lack those things. But what if you're a giver? What if you change your focus and you say, I would like to focus on that which I do have, and that which I have so much to the extent I can give it to others? That person doesn't feel like they're lacking. On the contrary, they're a giver. They must have because they're supplying it to others. They're the ones responsible for caring for other people. He says that, going down to what we say in Berachas HaMazon, Zohi Berachas Akel Baruch Hu V'yachalta V'savata. It's a great blessing Hashem gave us, not just to eat, but to eat and feel satisfied, for a person to feel not chaser, without that void inside. It's true of food, and it's true about our lives, about materialism as well. He quotes the famous statement of Chazal, where it's underlined, V'amru Chazal in Pirkei Avos, Ezehu Ashir HaSameach B'chelko. Who is truly wealthy? Who is truly a person who has means, has wealth? A person who is happy with what he has. You know, when I was younger, I always thought that was just a cop-out, just a line. You know, I had a little league coach who loved to say to us, it's not whether you win or lose, it's how you play the game. You know, he only told us that when we lost. When we won, it was, we won, we're the greatest, ice cream, we're the best. When we didn't win, then it was, hey, winning isn't everything. You know, like in the championship locker rooms of professional sports teams, they don't go around spraying and saying, it's all how you play the game. They go around saying, we won, we're the best. Is that what this is? Okay, if you're actually wealthy, then you're wealthy. And if you're not wealthy, then we say, all right, well, who is really wealthy anyway? It's all about, you know, your perspective. But it's not just a consolation prize. It's not just a, oh, if you're really a loser, then we'll just say, hey, anyone can be rich as long as you're changing your mindset. It's true. Based on what we talked about tonight, think about it. If you feel you have a lot of wants, you're not happy with what you have a lot more things on the plate, if we redefine want as empty, as lacking, if you want a lot of things, what are you saying? I'm missing a lot of things. How can a person feel wealthy if they're declaring to themselves, I don't have a lot of things? But a person who gives, a person who feels so content with what they have that they can afford to give others, what are they declaring to themselves? I'm a giver. I have so much I could afford to share with others. Such a powerful idea. It needs to be said again. Because this idea of HaSamech B'chalko, the person who is really wealthy, is one who is happy with what he has, is not just a spiritual concept. It's also that. But think about just in very practical monetary terms. If I told you, two different families, one family earns $50,000 a year, the other family earns $500,000 a year. And I asked you, based on this information, which family is wealthier? A, the one earning $50,000 a year. B, the one earning $500,000 a year. C, they're the same. Or D, not enough information. The answer has to be D. You can't determine wealth based on someone's income. What if the one earning $50,000 only has $20,000 of expenses? They're putting money away every single month. If the one earning in $500,000 has expenses of $2 million, they're going into debt. You can't define wealth just based on what you have. It's a fraction. It's an equation about what you have versus what you need. And you know what? We can't always change what we have. But we can change sometimes what we need. We can change what we need, what we feel we're lacking. We can change our standard of living sometimes. We can change the sense, the perspective. Wealth is not a number. Wealth is clearly a mindset. In very practical, real, literal terms, wealth is a mindset. It's having more than you need. When you give tzedakah, Chazal say, you're guaranteed to become wealthy. Gemara in Tainus and Daf Tes says, aser, tis asher, person who is giving tzedakah will be guaranteed to be wealthy. Only one question on that. It's not true. People give tzedakah, they don't become wealthy. And the Gemara says, you can actually test Hashem. Normally, you can't test Hashem's promises, but on this, you can test Hashem. You give tzedakah, you are guaranteed to be wealthy. One problem. It's not true. People give tzedakah, and they're not wealthy. So what's the classic answer? I mean, spiritual wealth. No. Don't say that. You told me I could test Hashem on this. So where's the proof? Prove to me that those who give tzedakah are wealthier. Okay, I'll prove it to you. Not with bank statements, but with this perspective. If you have the ability to give to others, you're a philanthropist. I don't care if you're earning $20. But if you give $1 away, you're saying, I have more than what I need. I'm not wanting for anything. I'm not lacking for anything. I can afford to support and help someone else. That's a mindset. That's wealth as a mindset. That person's not going to be miserable. That person's never going to feel like there's more and more things to strive for. They are sameach bechelkam. They are happy with what they have, in the sense that they're able to look around and say, now, where does all the extra go? What can I give back? Even just a dollar or an hour of my time. I don't need every hour to be able to accomplish more and do more stock trading, because I'm good. I'm fine. I have places to give. I can give with my time. I can give with my resources. I can give with my body. I can help out. I can volunteer. I can check in on people. I can use my time to text other people. My time is a commodity. My time is a resource. I don't need all my time for myself to continuously get more and more and more. Checking up houses on Zillow I'm never going to be able to afford. I can use my time to text people, how are you feeling today? That's called giving. Your time is extra because you're satisfied. You're done. You don't have to look elsewhere. You don't need more because you're not lacking more. We can't always determine what we get. But we can determine what we need. And the more we give, the more rich we feel. Chazal were right. You can test Hashem on this. If you give tzedakah, you are guaranteed to be, meaning feel, wealthy. Because you are saying, I'm not lacking anything. I actually have a surplus. Let's end off with a beautiful psychological study. It was published in 2019. Studies have consistently shown that happiness is related to giving even more than receiving, which is something that we would take for granted for tonight. But they did an amazing study back in 2018 that was published a year later, where they said that they took people, both in terms of receivers and givers, and had them find ways to do the same action again and again and again. So let's say they took people who were receiving, and they said, whatever you enjoy, do it for 5 days in a row. If you like a certain sandwich, eat the same sandwich for lunch 5 days in a row. If you enjoy a certain activity, certain movie, watch it 5 days in a row, take the same hike 5 days in a row, wear the same clothes 5 days in a row, go for the same drive 5 days in a row, whatever it is, do it that you enjoy for 5 days in a row. Unsurprisingly, as time went on, the level of happiness went down, because you eat the same sandwich, wear the same clothes, go in the same car, go for the same drive, same activities, same vacations. Over time, it gets stale and the happiness starts to go down. And they had people do the same act of giving 5 days in a row, the exact same act of giving. In the same tip jar in the restaurant, in the same local shelter, whatever it is you're doing, do the exact same action for 5 days straight. And the level of satisfaction and happiness that people felt did not go down as they repeated the exact same literal robotic move 5 days in a row. Now, why is that? Why is it that the happiness that we get from getting something wears off in a matter of days? It gets boring, gets stale. And why is it when we give, that satisfaction lasts continuously? Why does that feel like it can go on forever, even though it's the same thing? And Rav Dessler's language is very obvious. When we're taking, we're saying I'm lacking something. So you fill it up. If you'd have the same thing all over again, you're not filling that need. That need has been satisfied, but then 8 other needs cropped up. You need a different sandwich, a different car, a different job, a different community, a different spouse, different child. You're not never happy. Who knows? Right? You never feel like you're accomplishing enough. Because what you're desiring is outside of you, and you desire it because it's outside of you, so you're never going to get it. And when you do get it, it's not enjoyable after 5 minutes, or certainly not after 5 days. The euphoria that we get from getting a new job, moving to a new place, it wears off. It wears off. It wears off because we can't continuously keep up that sense of, it doesn't stick with us because it's external, and it doesn't fuse with our essence. But a sense of giving, a sense of feeling like I have a lot, focusing on all that, the good that I have, that's not going to run out. You still feel like you have a lot. You're not hungry. You're not striving for anything. You're declaring that you're all good. You have enough. You have extra time, resources, money. When you give that away, you're showing that you're set. You're not chaser. You're not lacking. You're not wanting for anything. That's able to last forever. So our takeaways for tonight, number one, it's wrong to say ambition is life. Ambition is not life. Ambition is a necessary means to help us achieve the things that we need, or the things that we lack, we can say. Try practically. When you say the word want, try replacing it with the word lack and see if it changes your perspective. Number two, in this dog-eat-dog world, very few are able to achieve. And if they are able to achieve, at what cost? The bloodiness that it takes to get there. And most don't even get there. They're just bloodied and end up hungry. Number three, this drive to materialism is external and therefore is never able to fill us because it comes from a place of endless taking. External things are never going to be able to be filling. So on the positive side, a drive for giving means a person feels rich and wealthy enough to share with others. As a very practical suggestion, try giving a little bit every day. Giving money, giving time, giving resources, looking in on someone else. Do it conscientiously. Do it with the thought, I'm now doing this to feel like I have more than I need. Focus on how fortunate you are to have these resources. It could be money, it could be time in your day, it could be the healthy body to walk outside and volunteer and carry someone's box. Focus on how fortunate you are that you can be on the giving end and not on the receiving end. Ritz Hashem, we should keep this in mind. Hopefully, we'll continue the series next week. Looking forward to seeing everyone back here. We'll talk about compassion and leave you with a question. Is it possible even compassion could ever be bad? Isn't compassion just assuaging our own feelings of guilt and discomfort with seeing someone in pain? Is that really called taking? Tune in next week. We'll hopefully discuss the next segment of Parshas HaChesed.